Our next speaker is Karen Cheng from Seattle. Karen is an associate professor in the Visual Communications Design program at the University of Washington in Seattle, where she teaches type design and typography. She was previously an instructor at the School of Design at the University of Cincinnati, where she received her master's degree in graphic design. Karen is an active practitioner whose design work has been recognized and published by the AIGA, American Institute of Graphic Arts, Communication Arts, Print, Critique, ID Magazine, the American Center for Design, PIE Tokyo, and Rockport Publishers. She has won gold and silver medals from the Society for Publication Design and the University and College Designers Association. And probably what you're familiar with is her recent book, Designing Type, which was published in 2006 in the UK by Lawrence King and Yale University Press in the US. And as I was just telling her, I happened to just see the German edition in a bookstore in Tokyo a few weeks ago. So, Karen.
Thanks very much for selecting to come to this presentation, the three that you have available. As John said, I teach information design, typography, and of course, type design at the University of Washington. Can you hear me? Is that a bit better? Okay, sorry about that. So type design is kind of an unusual subject, I think, for an all-purpose graphic design program in that you have 4 years with the students. Actually, you have 3 years because usually you don't have much control over their freshman year. And most graphic designers don't actually wind up designing usable working fonts. You know, because you have such a limited time with them, then it may seem kind of impractical to teach something like type design to young graphic designers. And I think especially now when font formats have become more complex, you know, and there's more ability to do specialized things, it would be difficult to have a true, I think, type design program that would cover all the technical aspects as well as the aesthetic aspects of designing letters and designing a font, actually. But I guess I would be in the camp where I feel that it's still important to for students, graphic design students, general graphic design students, to learn about type design because it's actually a way of improving visual sensitivity. After you teach this kind of subject to students, they notice small details. I would say they have a better sense of positive and negative space, you know, even when they do composition, and they're just more visually sensitive. I may be overly fond of this particular aspect, but many of the graphic design students who we get at the university, I would say that they are drawn to design because of so-called happy experiences in the arts. That is where people are encouraged to be creative and to be free. And so it's kind of a shock when I show various examples from the Basel School and I show, well, you know, maybe we'll just draw some lines for a while, but I wish for them to be precise or organized in a certain way and, you know, for them to think about pressure and so on. That doesn't seem very appealing if you've been drawn to design because of these kind of free activities. And so I was really touched when I read this article, you know, published, I guess, in the 70s or 80s, where other teachers of type design experience this, that there's a kind of disenchantment when precise and careful work is required. But I think it's this kind of emphasis on discipline and process that makes the teaching of type design so valuable. Not just because you wish the students to obey you in a certain class, although sometimes that is desirable, but that you, I think they could see that discipline is a way to discover relationships. I think that's what Stephen Sagmeister was talking about in the Helvetica movie, that you might choose to do something merely as a way, you know, add more restrictions to guide you. I think type design shows that, and it instills that kind of discipline. And I think it's clear that you probably be a better designer if you know something about letters and how they're shaped. Graphic designers, maybe the real bread and butter of it is working with words, with text, with type. You know, you have to work with ideas, you have to make them visible. And so I think if you have a sense of how letters are made, how they fit together, you'll be a better typographer, you'll make better compositions, you'll create better layouts, so to speak. So I think type design's important for all those reasons. So I have type design taught at the sophomore level. That means the students are basically 19 or 20, and they may or may not have had any kind of drawing foundations. We have a lot of transfer students, so they may not have had much in the way of design, or they may have learned kind of computer skills, and there are various aesthetics that then you have to unlearn probably in order to understand type design. So usually when I teach the course, it's a 10-week course, I start by having the students draw capital letters of serifs. I use my book to talk about sort of the principles or so-called rules of optical balance. This is an example. These are rather crude, you know, but again, these are students at the sophomore level, you know, who may or may not have had experience. So they can do any kind of serif alphabet. It can be an old Roman, it can be a new Roman, so forth. And so here you see some lowercase and some numbers to go with it. And so a lot of the emphasis is on, you know, what are the differences even between something as simple as a number one? You know, how do you want the, you know, tip to be shaped? What does that mean relative to what you've already developed for the I or the L, for example? And similarly, then, I have them do a sans-serif alphabet. In this case, it's a, you know, you see the student exploring these ideas through the lowercase g, one of the few fun letters that I encourage them to sort of play with. Okay. And then you see here some examples of A's, and, you know, they begin to understand there are, of course, structural variations. And then, you know, as I say, these have their little problems. This arch is probably too long. You know, the weights are pretty uneven everywhere. You know, there's some insecurity, I think, in these connections and so forth. But, you know, they're beginning to see these things, notice these things, and they're not things that they have thought about previously. So when I teach the class, it's maybe 25 students or so, and some days we'll have wall crits. They'll put up everything that they've sketched. You see here an attempt to make the words. It's always a real shock when you make the words and realize, oh, your capital letters are a bit dark, you know, what to do about that. And of course, there's the shock of spacing, realizing that spacing will make a considerable difference. So people post blank papers by their set of letters, and you can write comments on them, and other students write comments on them. And it's kind of an interesting day just because there's walls of type. I had another faculty member from the painting department walk by and said to me later, are you teaching those students the alphabet in your class? And I said, well, in a way, I guess I am. You know, so it's kind of an interesting day. And so when I used to teach the class, I would culminate the project with a series of letter boards. These boards are 15 by 15 inches, so the letters you see are about 2 inches or so tall. And so I would just ask them to select letters that were characteristic or unique to their particular design, and then try to space them, you know, evenly and display them on a board. So this is a serif alphabet. This is a sans serif alphabet. Again, you know, some obvious problems. This crossbar is probably too low. That's kind of filled in. That's kind of neither here nor there. Like, it could be more or less, you know. But I think there are some interesting ideas. And remember, these are sophomores, right? And so this is probably one of my favorites. I used to have them do it the real Swiss way, where, you know, you paint the board white with the placa, and then you draw the letters black with the black placa. And when you make mistakes, you go back and forth. But due to the great placa shortage of the 90s, I then moved to Illustrator and vector language. So the students sketch, they scan their sketches, and then they draw in Illustrator. And that also accomplishes the task of having them learn Illustrator, which is a different kind of small problem in a graphic design program. But I always liked this particular student because she was Asian. She was originally from Hong Kong, and she proposed making a font that would be influenced by those Asian characteristics and yet also have the architecture of Roman letter forms. This is when I allowed them to do a free font as the last of three boards. And I told her no, because I immediately thought it would be like that chopsticks type font, because she didn't strike me as inventive. And so, but then she came up with this, and I really think this is rather nice. I mean, there are some kind of elegant swashy kind of bits and so forth. Again, I think some parts fit better than others, you know, but for, you know, 3 weeks, your first type design class, I think that's pretty interesting. So, but the one thing I felt the course was really missing was this idea of the personality of type. Maybe that's more important for a graphic designer, you know, where you have to select types that might be suitable for a certain application, whether it's historical and so forth. And so I was trying to think about where does the personality of type come from? A lot of your work as an educator is finding a simple way to explain things to students, I think. And, you know, so you try to make these lists. Like, okay, maybe certain types look a certain way because they're fat or they're thin or they're condensed and so forth. They might look a certain way because of the designer. Maybe that designer has a particular aesthetic signature. I'd like to feel that you can usually tell, like a Segura type face, for example. You know, and then, of course, the time period makes some difference, as we heard very eloquently from Professor Mosley. You know, I think that, you know, obviously, if it was made at a certain time, that stamps the font. And then from its use, certain fonts get associated with certain connotations, whether it's banknotes or magazines or so on. And then, to a certain extent, its origin, you know, place. What does place do? So, you know, we do some lectures in the class, but it's not a history class. What I'm trying to talk about a bit here is, okay, you can tell a student, you know, maybe a 20-year-old who has grown up in eastern Washington where the strawberry farms are, you know, and say, like, okay, there was a man named Giambattista Bodoni, and he developed a high-contrast font, you know. It's Italian, you know, what does that mean? It was made in the 1800s, what does that mean? And then you can show them, you know, gorgeous fashion covers from the golden age of American magazine design, and you can even tell them, you know, okay, there are certain features in that photographs and thicks and thins that are kind of echoed in that typeface, and it became very favored and used in that period, for example. Okay. And then how do you talk about then when they see new fonts, like one by our ATP president, Jean-Francois Porcher, you know, what does it mean then when you say this is a Didone, but it's not really like Bodoni's Didone or a classic French Didot? You know, it has some of those echoes, it has some of that personality, but he's a modern living man, he's actually a young man, you know, and, you know, this is his interpretation of what a font like that could be like, what a typeface like that could be like. It's important, I think, because, for example, I was looking at that last STEP magazine that was given to us at the TechCon conference, and there was this article about Eric Speakerman and how he'd redone this PC magazine. This is the original, obviously, he wouldn't have done that. But you can see that, you know, those language of those magazines are generally very loud and sort of crummy, I would say, and kind of, you know, this is new, this is hot, and so forth. So I think the idea of using a classic old Roman Garamond-like font to redo that is really quite subversive and kind of interesting. And in a way, I think that's what PC hacking is about, isn't it? Being subversive and, you know, using old stuff to put together new stuff. You know, so it's kind of interesting, the subtlety behind that type choice and design. And I wanted our students to have more sense of not just how to structure fonts or that there were certain classic fonts that I approved of, you know, but that they would have some basis or knowledge for that. So I wanted a project that would do that more. So I thought the simplest way maybe to talk about it would be to talk about type and place. Maybe that's especially appropriate here in London, because I think there is such a sense of place to the Johnson types that you see and the Gill types that you see. You know, whether or not you know the biographical, you know, origin of those typefaces and their creators, I think even if you visit here once, you see the style of that geometric sans serif all over the street, you know, and it does feel very British to me, and an American, I guess, a kind of a mongrel, a Taiwanese Philadelphian that moved to Seattle. So it seems at least very, very British to me. So, so this is the project. What I do is I have the students break into groups. I allow the students to work individually because there's always some students who, you know, no one likes, or they don't like anyone else either, and so they want to work on their own. That happens. There's a bit of psychology to managing a class too, you know. So they only have 4 weeks to do the typeface, though. If only one kid does it, he doesn't have to do the numbers, for example, or something like that. So I try to cut somebody a break a bit. But they're supposed to work in teams because they only have 4 weeks for this part of it. The first 6 weeks I've used to kind of do sketches and talk about type in general. So their typeface has to be legible, and it can't be a dingbat font, and it can't be some crazy display font. But obviously they don't have time to optimize it for the screen in any way, and they don't have to consider the problems of signage and so forth. Equally important, the typeface should reflect in some ways the personality or attributes of the city. So in the beginning, I allowed the students to select their own cities because I thought, oh, that'll be fun. You know, they'll select their own. And I was really kind of horrified when the students wanted to do this city of Moab, Utah. I actually have not been to Moab. And she showed me photographs. She made this presentation. She said, oh, it's really very beautiful. It's where this national park is. You know, it's very prehistoric. There are these features. And she sort of summed them up here. I don't know how legible that is. This is from her presentation, so she didn't consider this contrast problem. But she talked about there are these rounded rock bases, you know, top mounds, these different kinds of textures. And she was really keen on the essence of the place, that it was very relaxing, it was very spiritual, it was very natural and very pure. And I just felt, how can a typeface possibly encapsulate that kind of place, you know? And I guess I was slightly turned off by that new age quality that she was discussing, you know? But there were some elements of typographic nature there, like these cliff drawings and so forth. So in the beginning, she did exactly as I feared. You know, she looked at those croppings and shapes and then formed this awful sort of rock-like typeface. And I said, no, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't want that. So then we talked about the fact that there were those cave drawings. And so she thought, well, maybe I can use a tool, you know, like a broad pen or something, and kind of, we were still with the rocks a little bit. But then, you know, we did this type of thing. And I thought, it looks more, you know, kind of medieval or Celtic maybe rather than, you know, kind of natural and prehistoric. So I wasn't too sure about that either. And so then here's kind of our compromise situation. I said, well, what if we make it sans serif? Then, you know, don't think about, you know, those rocks as being serifs. And what if the arches and so forth could have a kind of asymmetry or present themselves in certain of the letters? So this is the beginning of her sketches. And then it's usually more fun in the lowercase because they're less structured and so on. But you can see a lot of trouble with these diagonals. Obviously, they always stick out in a typeface, and it's hard to resolve that idea with them and still make them legible and balanced. So then you see here the page that has her initial cap set with along with lots and lots of notes. I mean, some of them are just structural problems, like I think that's too short, or if we're going to do this thing where they narrow in a kind of rock-like way, where else is that going to show up? I think, you know, obviously this isn't a nice ass. There could be more balance to their problems. But again, you know, she just has these 4 weeks. So, and then here's the lowercase, you know, and there are things that we're still trying to discuss, like what should those dots be shaped like if we have this. This is a little maybe too standout-y, I think, in the situation. These are just look like they've been through the ringer, kind of a washing machine. They got a little bit funny. So, but I still thought, you know, the idea was shaping up well, you know. So in the end, this is her type specimen poster. It's hard to make a really great one because you just have one weight, you know, but so people try to vary the size, but they draw it a certain size so they don't have those, you know, really a text weight. It's more of a display than anything else. But I'll blow it up so you can see it a little bit. And, you know, they have to get this thing into, type tool then too, and work on the spacing, which is a whole other problem. So, but that's the kind of idea. And I thought in the end, you know, if one went further with it, I thought there were some possibilities. You see this resolution of the diagonals, by the way, up here that she was struggling with. Still, maybe some things could be fixed, but not bad, I think, overall. So when I taught the class again the following year, I decided that I would assign the cities. Because I wanted to have more consistency in how they would be done. So I thought I would assign San Francisco. I don't know how many of you have been to San Francisco, but it's a very interesting city in that it combines the old and the new on the street architecturally. You know, you see these kind of juxtapositions there all the time. And so, you know, even things, I guess out here, this would not be considered all that old, but, you know, that you see these cable cars from the 1800s and they're, you know, still kind of in use and still necessary because of the topography, I think that's kind of romantic. And of course, it has, you know, a tremendously romantic vistas, you know, because of the water and, of, you know, the bridge and so forth. And I have to say that I'm a big Hitchcock fan, and so my vision of San Francisco was very much formed by his movie Vertigo, you know, and I think the elegance and sort of, you know, untouchability of Madeline Elster and those vistas in which she appears in, you know, I think there's a kind of, you know, wonderful drama to San Francisco. Maybe that's my imagination. So this first group of students, here I have a student group of three, and you can see each of them kind of settled in on these proportions. They thought they'd make it small X height to show those the kind of classic part of San Francisco, but sans serif, partially because it's easier, you know, to make a sans serif in the limited time, because one doesn't have to draw all the serifs and so forth. So I actually really liked the way they were kind of curving and dealing with these kind of small connections and so forth. But I think they decided against that. Again, sometimes students make decisions because of speed, you know, rather than aesthetics. So in the end, I think it's a little bit disappointing because as they work through their process, it's kind of just a condensed contrast sans, you know. So, but still, it's done with some efficacy. And it's interesting to see them work together in groups, because often one student is assigned to do the round letters or one student is assigned to do the diagonals, and they have to find some way to make that come together. You know, that's kind of difficult. But of course, there are many versions of San Francisco. The next year when I used San Francisco again, you know, students pointed out that there are very lively areas of San Francisco, like, you know, the Haight-Ashbury area. And, you know, there's like a very lively music scene, it's very grungy, you know, and there could be this young version of San Francisco, I think. So, and, you know, I had a group of these sort of, you know, skateboard type guys this year. And they wanted to focus on the fact that there is a small buffalo herd in San Francisco. It's called Buffalo Paddock. So I guess in the Golden Gate Park, there is actually this herd of, say, 10 bison or so that were preserved because I guess their natural habitat was erased. So they made this typeface called Buffalo Paddock. So you never quite know. Everybody's experience of the city is different, you know, depending on who you are and what your preferences are and your age, probably, and, you know, where you choose to live and everything. You know, so then I thought one of the most interesting things is the way they tried to make it slightly rustic, and maybe that kind of takes after the San Francisco gold rush or the kind of, you know, you see this kind of odd up and downing in those combination letters. And again, there are problems with spacing, there are problems with color, that T is too dark, you know. It's hard to make that condensed font to work with letters like the M, for example. The S is a bit stiff, you know, but I thought there was a certain feeling to that that I thought was interesting. And I like that they wanted to do that. This is the last example, which I have to show you. I may have a slightly shorter talk. I tend to get nervous and speak too quickly. I'm sorry. But in Minneapolis in the U.S. Is an interesting city because I think it's a liberal city. There's a lot of universities there. There's some technology there and so forth. But the students who were assigned to this thought one of the most interesting things is that they have an extensive skyway system. The skyway system allows you to walk indoors throughout a large part of downtown. It's not uniform, you know, it can lead to different hotels and it can look different in different spaces. And I guess it's, you know, of great use when it's wintry there and when it's hot there. And of course, it's the land of lakes, you know, there are lots of water there. So the students thought that it would be interesting to work on a typeface that had long A senders and long D senders, kind of talking about skyways, for example, and the lakes, the depths, and so forth. And they also thought it would be interesting to make it slightly modular, to allude to the sort of technical or digital aspects of the city. So you can see they're working on that in this group. You can see that, you know, they're trying to decide if it's worth it to try to shape those dots or if it simply won't be noticed even at display size. This is a pretty awkward G. You know, they realize there's some problems if you have long A senders and D senders. Where are you going to put the stuff? You know, that's an issue. They have to do just kind of the most basic punctuation, quotes, periods, exclamation mark, and so on, so that they can make some kind of specimen. And this is their final display board here, Skyway New. Again, there are some problems. I'll show it to you. The uppercase, I think, is less refined than the lowercase. Some of the letters are less legible, and again, a lot of trouble with the diagonals, maybe, how to get that to sit together. Again, you know, it's 4 weeks. They're sophomores. So here's the lowercase. I think it worked a bit better for them just because it's almost a fixed pitch font, you know? I mean, it's not, but the look of it, you know, is a little bit mechanical. So the spacing was a little bit smoother than it is for some of the students, you know? So you can see the kind of quality it has when it's fit together. They were allowed to choose their own passage.
that, you know, reflected the quality of and personality of the city. So, okay. So in the end of every course, you do course evaluations. And they're yellow sheets, and they fill out a variety of questions. And so I thought I'd show you some of the responses, because you're taking somebody who knows nothing at all about type and might even feel it's not interesting at all, and, you know, telling them something about it. I just really like how on this one the handwriting is so expressive, the way they write, and type was so boring, you know, that you really see that they feel it's so boring, you know. But it's great, you know, you can actually show them that there's this microscopic world underneath the world that you normally see, you know, that you could begin to explore. And then this is the thing I was talking about. It's important for them to be visually sensitive and to see small details. Sometimes they'll come up to me after the class is about 3 weeks into it, and they'll say, "I see type everywhere now." And I think if you've ever designed type or taken a class like that, you've had that experience where you never really noticed it before other than the content, and all of a sudden you realize that it's there and it looks a certain way, and you can't help noticing that it looks good or bad or different or interesting or not. You know, in some ways, they told me they wish they could turn it off as much as they had turned it on. You know, so much bad type everywhere, I think. So sometimes in the beginning of the class, I ask them if they have ever dreamed about type. And of course they haven't, because they think I'm a bit, you know, touched. So, and it's good though, because then I think they can begin to be self-critical. They can ask, is a font appropriate or is it good in the first place? I guess prior to the teaching of this class, the faculty there provided lists, like these are the 12 fonts which we will accept you to use. And if you use any of these on this other list, you know, you will receive a very low grade. You know, so it's much better, I think, to sort of explain, you know, even though it takes 3 months, you know, what is a good typeface. And this is the last slide, which I have to show you, and I think maybe the most important thing that you try to do with students. I think it's easy to not even realize that you're in an area where you don't know something. I thought that was maybe an interesting aspect of Professor Mosley's talk previously. Those people who are putting that type on those buildings, they don't even realize that their type isn't historically correct or appropriate or sensible as a choice. But you can often be in an area, even, you know, not just as a student, as a professional designer, as a faculty member, before you realize, like, oh, I don't know something. You know? So I think the fact that people realize that the world of type design just opens up a little bit, and that there's actually quite a lot to these simple letters that you see every day, that's maybe the most joyful part of learning, you know, as a student, and the most joyful part of teaching as a faculty member. So that's all I have. Thank you. I'm sorry that was so short, but you're probably relieved, because it means you can get some refreshment and so forth before the other lecture.
Karen, yeah. Since those are all design students, not type specialists, have any of them gone on and continued the type design?
Well, I've been at UW now for about, this will be the beginning of my 10th year. So, you know, many of the students I have, they would only be in their mid to late 20s now. So, I mean, some of them have. The one student I have actually did, he made an online portfolio site, and he showed his type specimen there. And I guess some art director at Penguin saw it and liked it and asked him to make the full typeface, and he did so. And it's actually kind of interesting. But he's left design, and he's trying to become a film writer. He's in LA, and he works as a production assistant. He was on that sitcom called Help Me Help You. So I don't believe he's focusing so much on type design. But I hope somebody will go on. I'll let you take a break, and if you'd like to ask questions, why don't you just come up to see me personally? That way you can have some extra time.
At 3 o'clock, Matthew Carter will be speaking, but we can't start early because the other tracks have to come coincide with this so everyone can speak. So, have a few minutes. Don't go far.
Is that all right?
Yes.
I'm sorry it's so short, but people are a bit relieved, probably.